Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and with me today is my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, it's nice to be referred to as lovely.
Of course, you're an incredibly lovely co-host. We all love you.
Aw, that's nice to hear.
This week, we'll be talking about the RPGs that are coming out in September, including the recently released Trails of Cold Steel 2, which came out 2 days ago as of this recording. And I've been playing, I don't think I'll be writing about it, but I will be talking a bit about it on this podcast. We'll be talking about RPG pitches. We got another one, and it's for a certain game that I love. It is called Valkyrie Profile, and I totally want to go back and play it now. And finally, we will be doing a large segment with our resident World of Warcraft super fans, Mike Williams and Jazz Rignall. Nadia, you and I have been extremely busy. I know that you've been playing a little game called Dragon Quest VII.
Yes, but by calling it a little game, you are a filthy liar. Filthy, filthy liar.
Anybody who's played the original PlayStation game can attest to that one.
Oh my goodness gracious. Don't get me wrong, I'm loving it very much. I mean, I can't say too much because of embargo at this point, but it is not a small game. Your life will be
breaking embargo.
To it.
She loves it. Oh my god. I'm sure Nintendo will give you a pass on that one.
Yeah.
But did you play the original PlayStation version?
I did not. It is, to date, the only Dragon Quest that I did not really play the original of.
So. Oh, really? You've played them all?
All the mainline ones? Yes. I mean, it's a little bit of a lie, because as far as, like, 5 and 6 go, I had to play fan translations, but I played, like, the original ROMs, as it were.
Hey, playing the fan translations makes you way more hardcore than me, because, I mean, yeah, I've played a few fan translations, including the fan translation of Super Robot Wars Alpha Gaiden, but you take the cake, Nadia. That's playing Dragon Quest V and VI before they were cool.
Yeah, I'm very, very serious about my Dragon Quest.
She is serious about her Dragon Questing. It's going to be a busy month for RPGs in general in September. I mean, we got Dragon Quest VII coming out very soon. We have Trails of Cold Steel 2, which came out a couple days ago. And later this month, we've got Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse, which is kind of flying under the radar. But I don't know, like SMT4 was good. It was also very long and very involved.
Yeah.
So we have three really meaty, but ultimately pretty niche RPGs coming out this month. I suppose it goes without saying that you're the most excited for Dragon Quest VII out of all three of those.
Yeah, and I'm already hip deep in that, so I'm kind of got a head start on everyone, but it's still consuming my life.
I gotta say that I am also the most excited for Dragon Quest VII. Man, it's a hard choice, because you got these three big RPGs, and they're all really, I don't know, expansive and time-consuming. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who can play, like, all three of them, but for somebody like me who has to play a lot of video games, if you go onto the site, you may have noticed that I've been mostly playing sports games lately.
Yeah, it's that time of year.
It's that time of year. I don't have a lot of time, so I kind of have to pick and choose my battles. And I think Dragon Quest VII is ultimately going to be the game that gets the bulk of my attention this holiday season. No offense to SMT4 Apocalypse. It was just after after the original SMT4, which I reviewed for IGN back in the day, I was a little burned out on SMT4. Like, that was almost a little too hardcore.
Yeah, I've heard it was a very difficult game, not very inclusive, as it were.
Really difficult, not always easy to tell where you should go next, and grim, like in the classic SMT kind of style. It's in this kind of, I mean, you start out in this weird, you start out in a kind of like medieval Japan setting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like cross over and you're suddenly in like post-apocalyptic Japan or Tokyo.
That's quite a jump.
Yeah, it's quite the leap, and it's interesting. And you interact a lot, and sorry, like my memory is a little hazy because this was a couple of years ago at this point, maybe as long as three years ago. You interact with like a map that's kind of a pain, mm-hmm. and it was hard to find certain locations, and you had to really be on top of the battles. Actually, I ended up liking SMT Strange Journey for the DS better than SMT4, but I don't know, like,
do you
SMT
have any idea?
Is always good, so...
Do you have any idea if 4 Apocalypse fixes any of the, you know, redundancy issues?
Truth be told, I haven't started it yet, so I will have to see. Our fearless leader is playing it as we speak, spoiler alert.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Sorry if that breaks embargo or whatever, but he will have a nice long review for you when it comes out. As for me, I've been playing Trails of Cold Steel 2, so I'm just gonna make an admission right now, okay, and I'm sorry if like people are unhappy about this. I'm not a huge fan of the Trails series. Yeah, this is blasphemy, I know.
Well,
but
neither am I, so it's okay.
As a like, as you know, these really rich anime RPGs, they certainly mm-hmm. have a lot of merit,
mm-hmm.
and they have like they lean heavily on the anime tropes, and I can see if people are like big anime fans, like
yeah.
that they would be really into them, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a giant anime fan, actually.
My people might
be like, what? What?
You?
Kat,
really?
You're an anime fan. Haven't you been talking like ad nauseum about 90s anime, and aren't you like a fan of like stuff like Valkyrie Profile
Gundam.
And hello Super Robot Wars?
Yeah.
Well, can I tell you a secret, Nadia?
Sure, tell everyone a secret.
I don't really see mecha anime as being in the same category as anime.
Oh, you are going to get some real arguments on that one.
Well, okay, you're an anime fan, right? You go to Otakon and
like,
stuff.
In terms of like tropey anime stuff, I really have to be in the mood for it. But I probably like it more than you do.
My point is that you spend a lot of time around anime fans.
Oh, that's true.
And
sure, yes.
Anime fans, like, they fall into a few different categories. And my experience is that mecha fans are very much their own, like, group. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there's definitely crossover. I can't remember what it was called. The one that was set in, like, an alternate world where England has taken over the world.
Oh, is that... That's not Hetalia, is it?
No, wait, not Hetalia. It was a mecha anime.
Okay, Hetalia is a mecha anime? No, it's not.
Yeah, it was... It managed to hit both Code Geass.
Oh, okay, I remember that one.
That one managed to hit both, like, both camps because you had a lot of really strong anime tropes.
Mm-hmm.
But mecha fans were able to appreciate the way that it subverted the traditional Gundam formula, in that the what would normally be your anime mecha bad guy was kind of the good guy,
mm-hmm.
and the kid who fell into the mech was kind of the bad guy.
Oh, that's,
or at least a rival. So it was fun in that regard, right? And
yeah.
it was also pretty funny. But by and large, you know, like the big mecha series that everybody like stands by, Gundam, is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
These real robot series, these war dramas, don't really seem to have that same sort of crossover appeal to people who might say, like Naruto.
Yeah.
So.
When I think of like kind of cliche anime stuff, I think of like the same kind of jokes and whatnot, like about, you know, boobies and stuff like that. But I'm assuming mecha anime doesn't have too much of that going on.
Oh, no, it totally does.
Me and my big
mouth. Just it can vary wildly, like some like even within Gundam, like you'll have shows that go way on the like overly comedic, and you have like anime boob jokes and all that stuff, or you'll have like, say, I don't know, Gundam Unicorn, which is a lot of like monologues about the nature of war,
mm-hmm.
and the emigration into space and blah, 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 and with beautiful battles, etc. But
right.
is very targeted at a particular type of fan. I admit that I am in that camp.
Okay.
Now, Trails of Cold Steel 2 kind of tries to split the difference. Like, you have this, like, really in-depth lore, like, lots of different players, like, it's trying to kind of hit that war drama aspect to it. And then, of course, the main characters, they all come from, like, varying backgrounds, nobility, different countries, that kind of thing. So they all have a different perspective on the war.
Right.
But it's all a bit surface level to me and pretty talky.
Oh, yeah.
And truth be told, I thought Valkyria Chronicles handled that a lot better mm-hmm. because it had the same sort of dynamic, right? Where you had this group of people thrown together from different backgrounds, working in like one big squad, fighting on behalf of Gallia against an evil empire that's coming in. But it wasn't as talky.
Yeah. It was just... I know what you mean, because when you have that surface level sort of those surface level anime cliches going on, that alone is fine, but it's really what you do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because... as you mentioned, Valkyria Chronicles, it just something about it made the characters so appealing that you couldn't help but root for them. And at the same time, it didn't stray away from dramatic stuff, but when it did do dramatic stuff, it wasn't so over the top that it became silly.
Yeah, I think that the fact that its vignettes were like really bite-sized
definitely helped. Yes.
And it didn't have like the really grindy, boring dungeons of...
Yes.
A game like Trails of Cold Steel,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, Trails of Cold Steel 2 as well. And Trails of Cold Steel, both it and its sequel have some serious pacing problems, which
yeah.
I discussed when I talked about it last year. Trails of Cold Steel 2, it's the same way. Like, you wake up at the beginning of the game, and you, like, set out to find, like, get the band back together, as it were. And this takes, like, 10 hours, and it's
not that interesting.
And it's not until you get the group kind of back together that things start to get going again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of cool things, like, it's cool to have an airship that you can populate. In fact, I wish Final Fantasy would take that idea of, like, the airship serving as almost like a Suikoden-style castle.
Yeah, I think 6 kind of touched on that, but it wasn't nearly as complex or fun as Suikoden made it with the castles.
Yeah, so I think Trails of Cold Steel 2 has that idea. I think that its battle system is competent
mm-hmm.
in the sense of it's kind of like the positional aspect is kind of interesting, and so that you can get you cast certain spells to take out large groups of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's also a little overly complex. Like, you're putting in, like, lots of different items. There's a lot of stuff to keep track of. There are multiple categories of spells. And it doesn't have the kind of, I want to say elegance of a Persona game. So it's a mid-tier RPG, and that's not a bad thing.
No,
I would say that it's certainly above a lot of RPGs out there
mm-hmm.
As a kind of this like really sprawling war epic that was produced by a pretty small team over at Falcom. It's actually kind of an impressive accomplishment. And people who are like really into JRPGs and anime and just want like a big crunchy RPG that doesn't necessarily have a lot of depth to it, let's be honest,
mm-hmm.
Are going to be like really into it. I am not on that camp.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to get super excited about it. And I've done my best. Like, I enjoyed Trails in the Sky Part 2
mm-hmm.
a fair amount, but that was more contained, I suppose.
Yeah.
Trails of Cold Steel 2 is a bit messier.
Yeah, it strikes me as an RPG that's it'd be great for like cold winter months, and you just have nothing else to do. By all means, really dive into that. But
mm-hmm.
It also sounds like if you're not like fully invested in what it's presenting, then you're going to be wasting a lot of your time.
Yeah, I definitely want XE to keep bringing these games out,
mm-hmm,
and I think it fills a niche that desperately needs to be filled, which is the kind of mid-tier RPG, you know, the kind of games that we used to get back in the PlayStation 2 era.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely need more of that, but it has a fair amount of competition, actually.
That's the thing.
I mean, like I said, you got three big RPGs coming out just this month, and I'm not sure that I would recommend Trails of Cold Steel 2 over either of the other games, so...
Yeah, I guess it all comes down to personal preference, but speaking for myself, I haven't played Trails of Cold Steel 2, but Dragon Quest is life, so... That is
Dragon Quest is love. Dragon Quest is life.
It is everything.
Now, there is one benefit to playing Trails of Cold Steel if you really want to. Unlike the first two games, Trails of Cold Steel is available on both console and handheld.
Oh, that's handy.
So you can, like, theoretically play it on both. And also, I mean, if you don't really feel like playing on handheld, I mean, and you have a PlayStation 3, you can play it that way.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. And if you're not like necessarily, you don't want to play on the 3DS, you want to play in the more powerful Vita, Trails of Cold Steel is there for you. So that is one aspect that helps it to stand apart. But yeah, I don't know. Like this, it hasn't grabbed me. And I got too many other games. I'd be really interested, like, I've heard people, like, say, like, why they loved it. I mean, we had Jason on here a little while ago.
Yeah.
And he, like, really, like, talked a lot about, like, what about this series in particular, the Trails series, like, really grabs him. But I'd be interested to hear what other listeners have to say about it. Kat.Bailey@usgamer.net or PM me over on the site. Let me know.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Nadia, let's talk a little bit about Valkyrie Profile.
Let's.
All right. So as you may recall, I've been soliciting pitches for underrated RPGs. And in a previous episode, I was like, somebody send me an email about Valkyrie Profile because I want to talk about it, please. And
you got it.
Kenneth Roberson obliged me.
That was very
kind. He said, I would gladly oblige your wishes to talk about Valkyrie Profile for as long as you wanted to, because that game... Hell, that series is as important to me as it is to you, but who knows, it is for similar reasons. I had first heard about Valkyrie Profile in the pages of Game Fan magazine,
It
was IGN. And the preview mentioned that the battle system would make those that had decent experience in fighting games feel right at home, and that dungeon traversal mimicked 2D platformers, which sold me so hard. I kept my eye out for the game for a while, but never saw it anywhere. In the winter of 2000, I got my first job ever working at the Roller City USA section of an amusement center called Funplex. I was shopping around for a new game. So he's talking about like getting these games. So he's talking about getting the game and everything. He was very excited. He says that the pitch that he got in the issue for Game Fan was completely correct. As running through those dungeons and getting into battles I chose to get into was wonderful. This was a big deal back in the day.
This was what, year 2000?
Yeah, this is in 2000. We still had like lots more random battles.
That's a very big thing.
But even better was the actual battle system. Being able to control four party members with assigning them to a face button on my DualShock controller was great. And figuring out the right timing to create high damaging combos was pretty much exactly what I wanted out of an RPG battle system. I didn't realize it until I got to do it. Also, every character having their own hyper combo finish, for lack of a better term, was just amazing. Even better that the mages got to have multiple finishers depending on what spell they had equipped on them at the time. I could go on, but it's your show and a great one at that. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I know the first game got a re-release in the PSP, but I heard the battle music from that one. And it's way less hype arrangement, and that's just criminal. However, I'd pitched that the third Valkyrie, Hriss, should actually get her own game. Lenneth got two, technically, with the third entry in the DS, and Silmeri got one on the second entry in PS2. I own them all, but I never beat them. But there'd be some things I'd like to fix with the series, like more varied enemy types and arrangements in dungeons, because once you learn the few per dungeon, fighting can get a little old. Also, it'd be cool if all the playable characters got to have more than one finisher. Technically, Lenneth had that depending on what weapon she had equipped, but it was still Nibelung Velesti, hype as that is on its own. Anyway, all these listeners need to get out and find a copy of Valkyrie Profile and ignore the fact that the latest entry is a mobile game. Also, if Nadia still hasn't played them by now, I'd be more than happy to ship them to her so that she can.
Oh, wow, really?
Considering that she's got me on Tumblr and is one of the few followers I have that actually reblogs me sometimes.
Aw, that's sweet.
Sorry, it's got so long of a message, but I gotta represent. Thanks, Kenneth. I really appreciate it. Yes, Valkyrie Profile. Maybe my favorite RPG of all time.
I have, this was a, if it was a PlayStation RPG, I was really late to the PlayStation era, so I missed out on it, but it sounds like a lot of fun. And frankly, I'm, one of the nicest things in life is getting caught up on old stuff that you missed and finding out for yourself how good it is.
It was back in the, kind of the Enix days.
Yeah, the glory days.
Enix, like, made their big comeback, right?
Uh-huh.
And Valkyrie Profile was a big one, because in Japan, it had... I received a lot of attention, it got a lot of awards, it was highly regarded, and so Enix brought it over here. There was just one problem, a couple problems. First of all, it was 2D.
Oh,
and we
yeah.
talked about this on the podcast. People don't like 2D, they want 3D, and they especially wanted 3D back then.
Yeah, apparently.
The localization was hit and miss. The actual story was fine. The actual writing was fine. The voice acting was cheesy in the extreme.
Of course.
But they got a bunch of Pokemon actors.
Did they really?
Yeah, no, they got the lady who played Ash.
Oh.
They got the people who played Team Rocket.
Oh, that's fun.
I think Brock is in there. I'm like 90% certain that Brock is in there. They got a whole bunch of them. It was pretty funny, actually. And also it came out in August of 2000, which was kind of a problem because... If I recall correctly, maybe that was the next month the PlayStation 2 came out.
Yeah, so talk about a deluge and getting drowned out.
And it was also competing with a little game called Final Fantasy IX.
Ah, no one played that.
Anyway, I bought Valkyrie Profile day one.
Uh-huh.
And I still own my copy. And it's a little slow to start. Like, it's funny. Like, I was complaining about Trails of Cold Steel 2, and God, I'm not looking forward to the hate mail on this one. But I was complaining about Trails of Cold Steel 2 getting off to a slow start. Valkyrie Profile gets off to an enormously slow start.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the first hour minimum is just spent going through, like, so you meet, like, this warrior, and you meet this princess, and you see, like, political machinations. And the next thing you know, like, the princess is turned into a monster and, cool. like, the warrior's forced to kill her. But then Lenith shows up and Lenith Valkyrie shows up and, like, takes her spirit and invites the warrior, Armgrim, to come join her. And Armgrim decides to kill himself rather than be captured and taken alive. So... And now, like, you have your happy little party. And, like, that immediately grabbed me because I was like, holy crap. He, like stuck a knife in himself, like, right there. This is, like, hardcore. I'm all in.
Yeah, I'm
and, of course,
RPGs.
Like, the 2D graphics were great. And I loved the voice acting. It was so cheesy and wonderful.
If
like,
I had the Pokemon just, characters, I'd love it, too.
Oh, it was just so over the top is mm-hmm. what made it a lot of fun, right?
Yeah.
And, like, this writing was like, come to me, dark warriors. Battle awaits us and stuff like that.
That's amazing.
It was over the top and cheesy and delightful, but didn't rely on stuff like, you know, tired boob jokes and that
yeah,
kind of thing.
We were just
so,
talking about.
And it the way it's structured is kind of interesting. So most of the time you're like in the sky,
mm-hmm.
and you'll like search for voices, and either you will be sent to a place where somebody's going to die,
mm-hmm.
and you have this wonderful little montage where you hear. You hear the scene being played out. And so, like, it's just the voices and the yelling and the crying and all that stuff. And so it gives you a sneak preview of what to expect.
Right.
And then you go down and you actually watch the scene and it's hands off. But these vignettes are usually really well done with maybe a couple exceptions and relatively quick. And then you get a new party member. And you can take this party member into a dungeon. And your goal, ostensibly, is to build them up and send them up to Odin so that he can fight the war against the Jotunheim. And you're heading toward Ragnarok, like you're on a ticking clock. Now, here's where it gets weird. if you do what you're supposed to do in this game,
mm-hmm.
you fail.
Oh, dear.
Because you have this mysterious stat called a seal rating.
Uh-huh.
What is this seal rating? I don't know. But you don't want it to be high. And if you do what you're told, it will go up. Mm-hmm. And the more people you send, I believe, the more it goes up. So you actually only want to send the minimum to keep Odin happy. And you want to send them, and you want to like properly prep them, because you get like good rewards if you do.
That actually,
like get the right abilities for them, you know, the whole nine yards, level them up, etc. And then send them up. And then much later you get access to them, so.
Yeah, that sounds a bit like almost like the decounter from Breath of Fire 5.
Mm-hmm.
Where, have you played Breath of Fire 5?
Mm-mm.
Well, basically, you know how the whole point of the series is turned into a dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you do that in Breath of Fire 5 too much, you turn into a dragon. Like, if you do it too much, the dragon spirit takes over your body, and you die. There's actually this horrible, kind of really disturbing cutscene where the screen turns red, and you see this silhouette of, like, this dragon bursting out of your body. And it's...
Yeah.
The sound effects are pretty vivid. So,
wow, that's intense.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that in that regard.
It's a little different in the sense that you're on a clock, right?
Right.
And so you're trying to get your seal rating low enough and hit the right story cutscenes,
right,
to be able to trigger the good ending.
Mm-hmm.
Because, spoiler alert, if you do what you're told, they'll go, "Thanks, Lenneth. That was awesome. You're good, Valkyrie. Night, night."
Oh, dear.
And that's it. To get the good ending, you have to kind of end up being your own Valkyrie. which is cool. Like, you're straying from the critical path. That's really awesome.
People are like,
"This game's too linear." I'm like, "What are you talking about?"
It's because you're playing it wrong.
It's the absolute opposite of that. And then when you're actually like going through the dungeons, like what Kenneth was saying is true, like it's kind of a platformer. You can shoot ice into the walls and like leap from wall to wall. Like there's a lot of like traversal puzzles and that kind of thing. And you can freeze enemies and jump over them, or surprise them or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the actual battle system is really interesting. As he said, like, you map the buttons to your D-pad, or not your D-pad, your face buttons.
Uh-huh.
And when you press a face button, they'll like rush out and attack. And your goal is to get a really high combo. And then when it gets to a really high combo, it'll purify Weird Soul. And then you can do a super attack. And you're like trying to chain these super attacks together. And it can get a little repetitive, but not so repetitive that it becomes flat out boring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to kind of min-max your characters, like, especially later you get into like really hard boss fights where they'll just like rain like tons of total party kill spells on you.
Sweet.
And you'll like come back to life like multiple times and stuff. And you have to know, like, you have to know when to trigger, say, your mage's like super attack, and like,
yeah,
whether it's a good idea. If you attach a wand that's going to give her a super attack, you have to be careful because it could break easily.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of want to save it for, say, like a boss fight.
That sounds really fun. How long is like the first game, for example?
Oh, pretty long. It's a good 30 hours.
Okay, so it's not like a bite-sized sort of RPG.
Oh, no.
Okay.
But it's not Xenogears level, right?
Oh,
it's
God.
Not like
nothing is Xenogears level.
You're not like on this crazy freaking epic. Here is a really interesting thing. It's randomized.
Oh, is it?
So
roguelike?
You're not necessarily going to get the same dungeons every run.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a pool of dungeons that it will pull from, and you stand a chance of getting them a different one each chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And also the people you get is randomized. So sometimes you won't get certain people.
So it's basically an RPG with a little bit of replay value.
Oh, yeah. And here's the real kicker. If you play it on hard mode, you get different dungeons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You get different dungeons and different characters, and it's longer.
Wow.
Yeah, so like you get more time to kind of like screw around, and that's how you get the good ending. Like it's actually a lot easier to get the good ending on hard mode,
mm-hmm.
which is why I often play on normal, because it's shorter, and you have to like really be on the ball to get the good ending on that one.
Right.
But I plugged it in not too long ago just for the hell of it to see like how I felt about it after all these years, and went through the entirety of the opening sequence and found that it was surprisingly not that painful. Mm-hmm. And there are a few reasons for that. The music was great. The music in this game is so good. Uh-huh. Oh my God. Like across the board, the music is phenomenal. It is artistic and colorful and has like a lot of genuinely weird and fun scenes. Like there's a scene in like a Japanese restaurant where like the princess who's in disguise is like berating Armgrim and you're like going, what the hell's going on? And it has a great finish. And then the next thing you know, you're in like a dungeon and they send along, what's her name? They send along one of the gods to help you out, so just so you can learn the battle system. Mm-hmm. And that dungeon moves at a pretty good clip, too, and it has great music. There's just so much I love about this game, Nadia. It hits all the right notes, and if you get the good ending, it's so satisfying.
Is it a PS1 classic? Like, could I download it from my PSP?
Nope. It is one of the hardest games to get a hold of, because it's really expensive. There is a PSP version, but it's not optimal. Mm-hmm. Like, you definitely want to play the original PlayStation 1 version, and it's not a PS1 classic, which is a real drag, because everyone needs to play this game. It never really got its due, which is too bad, because...
And this was by Enix, you say, before I guess they became Square Enix?
Correct.
Oh, so it's going to be double hard.
Well, yeah, it was actually by Tri-Ace, but it was published by Enix.
Right.
And this is where, like, Tri-Ace kind of made their name as, like, a weird, inventive RPG studio that has a thing for these kind of action-based combat systems. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, no, Valkyrie Profile, it does so many things right. I'm not saying that it's perfect. Like I said, it can get a little repetitive. Some of the vignettes aren't super great. They can be a little slow. But, man, I love that game. Valkyrie Profile Samaria, not as good.
And that's for, was that also for the PlayStation 1 or PS2?
PS2.
Oh, okay.
PS2. Really interesting. It's in 3D. As Kenneth said, you play as Lena's sister, Somaria. Mm-hmm. But Somaria is like inhabiting this girl who's like a princess or something. Mm-hmm. And she's like your typical, like, extremely meek female anime protagonist.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, Lenneth would be like, you know, I destroyed you. I'm awesome, right? And mm-hmm. She'd be like, must we fight this battle?
Oh, we don't have any of those. And
I'm like, yes, you must fight this battle.
Get to it.
And the music was more subdued. And so was the voice acting. It wasn't as over the top. And it was a lot more traditional than the previous Valkyrie Profile. Like, it followed a much more linear path than before. It wasn't like you were hunting down Ein Harriar to build your army. Mm-hmm. So you were stuck with kind of the same party throughout a good chunk of the game. Though you could get Ein Harriar, but it was a little... Like, you would just find them in a dungeon.
Yeah.
Right? It'd be like, oh, look, there's an Ein Harriar. All right, I'm adding you. The best thing about Valkyrie Profile Samaria was its battle system, which actually built a lot on the original. And it was weird. Like, it's actually 3D. So, like, you're running in a 3D arena. Mm-hmm. And you want to try and hit an enemy's body parts in, like, a certain way to get them to break. Mm-hmm. So, if you just button mash, you're going to have a hard time.
Right.
You have to, like, get behind them, like, to their weak point. Or, like, you have to use attacks that are going to target their legs or something. And so you can start hitting their weak points and breaking things off.
Ouch.
And those things that break off are like crafting materials and stuff. So
double ouch.
Yeah, it's it's interesting. And it actually ties into the original Valkyrie Profile and explains certain things that I'm not going to say what. And a familiar character plays a rather vital role in Valkyrie Profile Samaria. So... it's a good companion piece. It's just not as good as the original. Mm-hmm. And the third game is weird. It's for the DS. It's a tactical RPG. And It's called like Covenant of the Plume.
Oh, I think I heard of it, but I never played it, obviously.
And basically you have this like death plume, right?
Cool.
And you have people on your party and you can give them like death powers, or like you can give them superpowers from one mission, mm-hmm. but they die afterward.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
That's grim.
It is pretty grim. And your goal is to kill Lenneth because you're like real mad at her or something. It's been, that was literally the first game that Jeremy handed me when I moved here.
Oh, really? So that's a nostalgia right mm-hmm. there.
I was reviewing that, and he also gave me Super Robot Wars something something. This game is crappy. I didn't like it. Endless Frontier. Ugh.
You hit the ground running, that's for sure.
Oh my god, Endless Frontier was so bad. That was very much my like welcome to the games industry kind of thing. Here you go. But I liked Covenant of the Plume at the time, but in hindsight it was kind of flawed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the upshot of all this is, Nadia, you should go talk to Kenneth and get Valkyrie Profile. Throw it in your assignment pile.
Maybe I will. I just feel really like nervous about having someone else's game, and you know, especially a valuable one, and just what if my cats use it as a frisbee one night? I don't know.
You know, it's like $100, but I think it's worth it. I think it's worth owning.
Oh, that's not too bad, yeah.
No, you can get on various places, and you can just get the discs. You don't have to get the jewel case with the manual and everything.
I have to dig out my PlayStation, of course.
Yeah, but it's kind of the, I don't want to say, it's kind of the crown jewel of my game collection. Like, I will never sell it. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm so happy to own it, and like, now I just really want to go back and play it.
Maybe you should.
Yeah, no, it holds up actually really well. A lot better than a lot of PlayStation games. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's kind of a pain to play certain PlayStation games. But if you don't have a launch PS3 or a PS2 that has the right cables for an HDTV.
Right.
But here's what you can do. You can go out and get an emulator. Called like EPSXE or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually rip the disc and get the ROM. And then you can play it on your PC.
Right.
And you can add like various filters and everything if you want.
Oh, that's neat.
Totally legitimate way to play. It doesn't require that you own like a console.
Yeah. I mean, I have my console somewhere. I mean, both my husband and I, we combined our console collection. So we have two of everything practically. And we have 3 Mega Man Legends. I don't know how that happened. But, I have a CRT television for retro games, so that would be a problem.
Well, that's the way you got to play it.
Absolutely.
It's like on a CRT television. Anyway, get a hold of Valkyrie Profile, Nadia.
I definitely will.
The rest of you. And thanks, Kenneth, to sending this article in so that I could talk about Valkyrie Profile, the game of my heart.
Thank you.
Still probably my favorite RPG. Maybe Persona 4 is past it. I'm not sure. Like, it's kind of up in the air, but they're both really freaking good RPGs. But now we're going to head off, and we're going to get Mike and Jazz on here, and we're going to talk about some World of Warcraft, so stay tuned. All right, we're back, and with me right now is our two biggest World of Warcraft fans. These guys have been playing World of Warcraft for frickin' ever. Jazz, like, literally edited the official Warcraft World of Warcraft magazine at one point. That's how much of a fan he is.
Yes, I did.
We got Jazz, and we got Mike, and they are here to talk about the latest World of Warcraft expansion, Legion, which went live last Friday. They've had plenty of time to play it. Jazz, you've been writing the review. You wrote like, God knows, like 2,000 words about it or something so far, and you still haven't like scored it. What are your thoughts?
Yes, it's been an interesting expansion for World of Warcraft. I think Legion really is Blizzard's make good after the rather, it wasn't exactly kind of universally panned, but it was definitely heavily criticized for Warlords of Draenor for its lack of endgame content. There are only two kind of major content expansions for that expansion over the duration of 2 years, which really left a lot of people needing things to do in the game. And I think, you know, the game shed a tremendous amount of subscribers. If you follow World of Warcraft at all, you'll see that, you know, it pretty much halved its user base over the duration of the expansion because people just got bored of the game. And, you know, Legion is Blizzard sort of make good for that. And they've definitely done an awful lot of work to try and fix problems, make sure that there's a lot of endgame content and address some of the concerns that people had about Warlords of Draenor.
How about you, Mike? What do you think?
I agree. I wrote an article about it when they announced it, and I called it Blizzard's Baby Comeback expansion. They've done a lot of work in sort of quality of life issues and some big tweaks to the game to sort of make it a bit friendlier. But the interesting thing I noticed when I was playing is a lot of people are sort of talking it up, and Warlords of Draenor, like, what they had wasn't bad. It was just, as Jez said, they didn't release enough content. And I feel like Legion builds upon some of the stuff that Warlords did well. But at least they look, and I put look in air quotes, like they're going to fix the issue of ongoing content. 'Cause it looks bad for a while, not just from the fact that, you know, players didn't have anything to do, but they're also up against, you know, they got Guild Wars 2 and Final Fantasy 14 out there, both of which have a very steady content release cadence. So I think that was a problem that hit Blizzard pretty hard. And Legion is sort of a, hey, we've learned, we're sorry.
What's interesting about Legion is that a lot of people would argue that the classes have been kind of stripped down compared to where they were before. Lots of abilities kind of rejiggered. Some have said that even certain specs have been kind of ruined. Jazz, what's your opinion on that one?
Yeah, it's been interesting to me because Warlords of Draenor did a lot of talent pruning, and to me it didn't really make the game any more interesting and fun. Some specs felt very rote after Warlords of Draenor's changes, and I wasn't a big fan of them. And Blizzard have kind of gone in for a second round of changes for Legion. And this time it's been, I think, I initially didn't like the changes. My main is a discipline priest, and I wasn't too keen on the changes that they made to that particular class, the specialization. They basically turned it from a sort of a healer where you're casting damage mitigation to one that heals through doing damage. And initially it felt very clunky, but the more I've played it, the more I've got used to it. It's quite fun to play now, and you know, it definitely makes for a more interesting experience. And I think overall, what Blizzard have done is taken the different class specializations, which were in some cases very homogenized. You could play different specializations on your class, and they all felt very similar to one another. They had similar spells. And they've put spells into particular specializations to make each class specialization feel more unique and give it its own play style. And I think the three classes that I play, the Death Knight, the Hunter, and the Priest, they've all been very successful in making the specializations feel very different from one another. And it's definitely kind of made the game a little bit more interesting from a specialization choice point of view, but not all changes have been that successful, particularly in the case of the Hunter. The Marksman Hunter feels a bit boring to play. There are less kind of situational abilities that you have available now, particularly for PvP. And it's made the kind of the class feel a little bit one-dimensional. Beast Mastery is kind of fun. It's a lot more focus around pet abilities, as you might expect from Beast Mastery. And the Survival spec is now a melee class, which is really interesting. It's to change the hunter from a ranged attacker to a sort of a semi-ranged melee character is really quite drastic. And that's decent to play. I'm not a huge fan of melee characters, but it's like I said, it's made the class a little bit more interesting in terms of choices. So I think overall, it's been hit and miss. I think some classes have definitely benefited from the changes and others haven't. I think, Mike, you were saying that the Paladin isn't particularly exciting to play, right? Am I right about that?
No, So the thing that I've found, and I think that is interesting with all of the pruning, is that there are some classes that are boring, like they're not particularly interesting to play on a rotation. And Protection Paladin, which is what I play on my main, is very much like almost jumping back to our Burning Crusade incarnation, where you're very effective, but it's not very interesting in the amount of choices that you're making moment to moment. And I think that sort of is what has happened in Legion. As far as I can tell, pretty much all of the classes are effective. 'Cause usually we come through an expansion and there's a few classes that aren't particularly working. In this, I find pretty much every class is effective, some better than others, but for the most part, everything works, but some of them just aren't interesting. And that varies from person to person, like if that's really a problem. I'm fine with it, because I'm a tank, so if it's not interesting, then I sort of fill the space with other stuff. If I don't have particularly interesting skills to use, then I sort of see how far can I push the damage? What other ways can I tank? You know, I sort of mini game it out there. But otherwise, I think the pruning was needed, especially at the point we're at. Is this five expansions at this point?
This is the sixth one, I believe.
This is sixth. General Mudflation was taking over, so I they needed the pruning, they needed the cutting, and I think the Blizzard calls it the class fantasy, works very well, especially with the addition of artifact weapons and the class order hall like quests, which sort of feed into that. Oh, your class and spec is this, and the missions to gain your artifact weapons very much feed into that.
I was talking to World of Warcraft's director, Tom Chilton, who's been with the game since the beginning of time. And I was like, well, what's like the one thing you've learned about class design over the past, 12 years or whatever? And he said, one important thing is that there are limits to the complexity of the character class. And those limits are closer to what the complexity of the class design was when we first launched than we thought. We thought we had a fair amount of breathing room in terms of what stuff we could add to the classes before they became too cumbersome, and we hit that and passed right by it without realizing it. And then he added, we're going to be a lot more disciplined in how we allow the classes to bloat. So Legion is kind of a corrective in that regard, but I mean, that's kind of the natural result of any MMORPG, right? You just keep piling on systems and abilities. Because if you launch an expansion and a class doesn't get some like interesting new toy, then they're going to be kind of unhappy. Or if you don't like make interesting changes to the way the game plays, people are going to be unhappy. So I think it's incredibly easy to blow right past that space that they were talking about. And now we're at a point where they're reining it all in. And I think that process was always going to be kind of painful.
Yeah, it's been a... I think It's been interesting because it's made the game that what they've kind of kept as the game is the rotations, and they've sort of pared the game down to a very specific set of spell rotations now for every class, and I think depending on your point of view, it's either made the game boring and kind of a little bit rote, or has made the game a little bit more interesting in the rotations now have gone up from, in case of some classes, from just a couple of buttons to sort of three or four buttons and waiting for abilities to proc and then reacting to that. But it's kept the core game mechanics of WoW pretty much the same as they were. So I think, you know, overall the redesign has been a success in the fact that they haven't lost that original kind of WoW flavor that most characters had when they launched. And but it's come at a cost of sort of a little bit of depth of character. What they've gained in uniqueness in terms of class specs, they've lost in some respects of sort of depth of character. But then, you know, that's, like you said, that's what needed to happen to really sort of pare characters back down to a sort of a core functionality that they can then sort of build out over the next few expansions without feeling like they're really bloating the talent and spells and abilities.
What do you guys think of the Demon Hunter?
I enjoyed playing it. I've only leveled one up to 100. I just played through the early sort of leveling up quests, and it's a fun character to play. It takes about 2 hours to level one up from 98 to 100. And during that time, you learn your various spells and abilities. And it's a pretty powerful class, but it didn't exactly stand out to me as the mechanics didn't sort of strike me as being particularly fun or innovative. It's sort of a fairly standard melee character that just feels a little bit overpowered at the moment, particularly in PvP, that it can output a tremendous amount of damage. And has some decent crowd control effects that allow you to level up quite quickly. Have you played it yet, Mike?
I have. It's overpowered like a new class is overpowered every time. So I figure probably a couple patches in, it'll probably get nerfed. I did it with tanking, and Demon Hunter is almost a super solo tank at this point. Almost, I'd say, like Wrath of the Lich King's Prot Paladin, in that you can do a lot of the things that are needed for an entire five-man group alone, because the class is so powerful. So it's a little bit of a rogue, a little bit of a tank, you know, sort of a rogue warrior feel to it. But it's definitely overpowered, I think. I mean, I'm not a class designer or anything, so I think it'll be nerfed probably like either middle of this expansion or by the next expansion.
How do you guys think it compares to the release of the Death Knight in Wrath of the Lich King?
I think overall that, and I said this in our Warlords review, I think Blizzard has, over the years, gotten far, far, far better at storytelling. And a lot of those seeds were laid when the Death Knight launched, and they added things like phasing to the game. And I think they've only gotten better at that over time. So having done the Death Knight starting experience recently, because I essentially rolled all of my characters on a brand new server, So I rolled a Death Knight as sort of my bank alt. And it's like night and day, honestly.
So, Jazz, PvP, my recollection is that Legion's PvP changes are a little controversial, and you are a big PvP fan, so can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. There's been some major changes to PvP. First of all, there's a new prestige leveling system that as you play Battlegrounds and Arena, you earn honor that levels you up, and as you level up, you get to learn new PvP specific spells and effects and ability enhancements, and that's a really good thing. When you reach the honor level cap, you can then prestige, lose all your abilities and start over again for some basic rewards. I think the jury's still out on whether it's worth prestiging, because you're quite a powerful character when you get to honor level 50 and you have all of your abilities, and so you have to sacrifice all of those again to start over. But the really big change for PvP has been that gear is now not really important in player versus player content. Basically, when you go into a Battlegrounds or Arena, all of the bonuses from your gear are stripped away, and you're given a class-specific template that sort of equalizes the playing field. And I think that's a really, really good thing. It allows Blizzard to fine-tune different specs, templates, and really fine-tune PvP. But at launch, Legion's a little bit out of whack, I think. Certain melee characters, particularly Demon Hunters and Rogues, outputting a tremendous amount of damage in PvP, and it's combined that with all the sort of the stuns and crowd control effects that are still in the environment. I'm amazed that that we still have as many crowd control effects as there are. It definitely makes it difficult for a difficult environment for casters, basically, and particularly for healers. Healers can be burned down quite quickly if you get a couple of characters on you. And some of this sort of dovetails into the class spec redesign. There's a lot of spells now that you have to hard cast. You know, you have to stand still to be able to cast, and they take quite a long time to cast. Whereas before, most classes had quite a big toolbox of instant cast spells, meaning that there was quite a high mobility to the game. So you could kind of kite around melee characters and stay alive. But now it's very difficult to do that because your biggest healing spells are slow casting. So that gives melee characters the ability to kind of catch up with you and just keep pressuring you the whole time. And it just makes for a very tough environment to survive if you're not in sort of decent armor. And I just think the just some tweaks need to be made to certain class templates to sort of dial down the amount of damage, or to improve the ability for classes to avoid damage, and then that will kind of make PvP a little bit more equal for all. So it's a small but major tweak that needs to be changed, and I think that'll help shut everybody up and hopefully make for an environment that just feels a little bit more like an even playing field. At the moment, it just definitely feels like it favors melee characters too much.
All right. So as you guys said, we are on the sixth expansion of World of Warcraft. God, that's a lot of expansions. And holy crap, this game has been out forever. And this isn't the end. There's going to be a lot more expansions. Tom Chilton's already said that they've got multiple expansions planned. And why would they stop? They got millions of users. Didn't this game sell like 3.3 million copies, Mike?
Yep, they just announced that today. 3.3 million copies.
Oh my God.
For its launch week. So it's pretty much still going. And I mean, to be honest,
Blizzard's doing the Scrooge McDuck thing right now.
Yeah,
and that's crazy. Like, this game underwrites everything for them. And they got Hearthstone, too. It's not fair. Stop being so good at this, Blizzard. Anyway, yeah. What were we saying, Mike?
I mean, realize at this point, EverQuest got an expansion last year.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's totally true. They're still going, too.
So I mean, if EverQuest is still, you know, making enough money to carry on, then I don't see any reason for WoW to stop. And EverQuest, I think, is doing like two expansions a year or something like that, or one every year, something absurd for what you would think EverQuest would do. So, WoW will be going for a while, y'all.
Looks good. That's what amazes me, is that even though it's a very low-poly game, Blizzard's art team have really got sort of making the game look good down pat. You know, I mean, when you look at it very, very closely, you can definitely see its age. But it runs on kind of fairly low spec machines, which means that it's very inclusive if you haven't got a great PC. And you know, this expansion in particular, I think it looks very pretty. Some of the landscapes are great. You know, Stormheim and High Mountain. I really enjoyed going through both those environments, and Azuna is a very pretty forested sort of elven area, and it feels quite contemporary. So I'm certainly happy to play it. And when I do, I don't really feel like I'm playing an old game. You know, it feels quite modern, particularly with the changes that they brought into the game. You know, when you look over the years, how much WoW has evolved and how many amazing quality of life additions Blizzard has incorporated into the game, it's definitely a very far cry from the game that launched 12 years ago.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that game, I mean, like, people look back at it fondly, like Burning Crusade or Vanilla, but before Warlords of Draenor, I did the full 1-90 stint, and some of the older content just, it does not age well, especially Burning Crusade, which I felt was a slog going back through it again. And Blizzard has definitely improved the game, and I think Blizzard's strength has always been, look at other developers' ideas, take them, polish them up. And I felt for a while there they weren't doing that in WoW. And like Jazz was talking, the PvP, that's essentially what Guild Wars 2 does for their PvP. Everyone's normalized, and then there's an extra like PvP track of skills that is added on top. And it's a good idea. So I don't see why Blizzard would have avoided it until now. Or they also added as a quality of life change the enemy tagging system. Whereas in the past, if you attacked an enemy, that enemy was yours. Which made questing a little bit difficult, because occasionally you would need an enemy, but another player would hit it before you would, and then you had to wait for that enemy to respawn. Now it's just like, oh no, as long as you hit it, you get credit. You're good. And that's another something that other games had done, and Blizzard had not, just for no real reason, as far as I could tell.
Have they redone the opening areas for everybody yet? Or more importantly, is it possible to circumvent some of the older content? Because I gotta say, as somebody who does not have a lot of investment in World of Warcraft's history, every time I try to pick it up again, I always get really freaking bored. Like, but with that said, like, some of the opening areas are fantastic. Like, when I was playing Cataclysm back in the day, the Worgen stuff at the beginning, really good, you know? So I'm kind of like going, what, is it possible to get to the good stuff, like, fast?
I have feelings about that. I actually have half an article written directly about that problem. Because what Legion did before, what WoW did before Legion launched was this event called Demon Invasions. And basically they were randomly generated events that took place around the world, but they offered up a ton of experience. So a lot of players actually rejoined before Legion so they could start new characters and level them up to max level relatively quickly. Like over the course, if you just did invasion to invasion to invasion, over the course of like maybe 2 to 3 days, you could have a max level character. And Blizzard offers a boost when you like buy Legion, but I honestly think that they need some sort of either lower the price of a level boost, because currently it's $60, which is way too high, or they need to make the Legion invasion idea more like create an island or something, call it the Isle of Endless War, and give players a way to get around that early content. Because a lot of the barrier I find is a lot of people are on a bunch of different servers, and trying to start new on a new server or trying to start a new class or anything like that is really hard and WoW. Like, painfully hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's been the biggest barrier to entry for me as for a while, and it's kind of what makes me want to play Final Fantasy XIV a little more than World of Warcraft, but so it goes. Final thoughts from you, Jazz, and I'm kind of curious, like, what's the one thing that you wouldn't mind seeing in a future expansion or update?
Yeah, I think Legion overall is a very strong expansion. It's probably my favorite expansion so far since Wrath of the Lich King, which I really did love. I think it's there's a new scalable questing system which really helps make a big difference to the game, and I think what might be interesting is if that scalable questing system is extended to the rest of the world, so that you could actually go back and do some of the old iconic content again and feel challenged by it. That might be a kind of a very interesting new addition to the game. But overall, I think I'm pretty pleased with where it's at. Obviously, you know, I believe PvP needs to be a little bit more finely balanced than it currently is. The reward system from PvP is also a little bit meager, even though gear isn't that important anymore in PvP. It would be nice to earn gear through a little bit more rapidly than you currently do through PvP, that you can then use out in the open world for questing and dungeons and the like. I think this is a really, really good expansion, and I'm just interested to see whether it can maintain the sort of the content momentum that it's built up from launch. As soon as you hit 110, there's a tremendous amount of things to do. Some of it feels a little bit grindy, but then again, that's always the case with any MMO. You know, the sort of some of the longer term projects can feel like a bit of a grind. But yeah, I'm very happy with it, and it, put it this way, I took a year off during Warlords of Draenor just because I kind of got bored of the game, and the sort of the new content didn't really engage me. And I'm sort of back in love with the game again, and playing it nightly. So, you know, job done.
Mike?
Honestly, for me, it's just the leveling. I think the game really needs a way to maybe not completely circumvent the leveling, but the systems that they have now, the heirlooms and the boost, is just not enough. That's pretty much it. Otherwise, I really enjoy the state of the game, and I enjoy playing my characters. Like I said, I started on a new server, but like trying to work up my new alts is like pulling teeth. It's just like, this is so annoying. So, yeah, just leveling improvements, really. Please, Blizzard, please.
All right. If you have any additional thoughts or an underrated RPG pitch, send me an email at cat.bailey@usgamer.net or PM me or PM Mike or Jazz. They are also on the site, of course, because we all work for US Gamer. But speaking of US Gamer, Acts of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and various other venues. Check us out on Twitter. You can find me at @the_catbot. You can find Mike at Automatic Zen, and you can find Jazz at Jazz Rignall. And of course, you can find Nadia at Nadia Oxford. Be sure to check out her blog, Tiny Girl, Tiny Games. Jazz, you've got your World of Warcraft Legion review in progress going. As is custom, it is extremely dense and extremely detailed, so you should go check that out if you want even more information on World of Warcraft Legion. Mike, you got anything that you want to promote?
I mean, just look forward to more of my excellent work on US Gamer. I have an article on WoW Legion coming up soon, and we'll be finishing up the review very soon, so look forward to it.
Indeed, be excellent to one another. And Jazz?
Not at the moment, nothing RPG related. I'm actually not, it's funny, I'm not much of an RPG player normally, but World of Warcraft I do love. Other than that, you can find me in such racing games as Forza Horizon 3 and usually shooting people in games like Overwatch and Call of Duty. So I'm not sure what it is about World of Warcraft that I like. It's definitely the PvP, I guess, that really keeps me playing. But I just enjoy tooling around in that game. There's something about it that feels inclusive and not too complicated. It's not a complex game. And so it's a comfort food game for me.
It's okay, Jazz. The best RPG of the year is coming out in a couple weeks. FIFA.
That's going to be an interesting new sort of take on the game. I'm looking forward to seeing how that storyline works.
Yeah, it's going to have a story mode and everything. It's going to be great. Can't wait to play it. But yeah, so follow US Gamer at USGamerNet, and we stream quite a bit over on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/USGamerNet. Next time, I think we're going to be doing a big Dragon Quest VII episode. Nadia is going to have all of the takes. I am looking forward to it. So join us then. And until then, for Nadia and Mike and Jazz, thanks for listening. And until next time, happy adventuring.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.